Okay, so this parasha is a lot of interesting ideas, a lot of interesting new concepts. The idea of a rebellion taking place is kind of exciting in some ways. Obviously, not something that we desire, but it kind of changes up the typical parasha structure. We clearly have a rebellion on our hands, which is really remarkable to think about. The greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatness of Aaron, HaKohen, and nevertheless, Korach v'Chod Aso felt it necessary to go after them and to basically lay claim to the power that they were essentially taking for themselves. That was his basic argument. We'll see here a couple of different interpretations of that idea, but let's get started with the Meshech Chachma for an interesting, really interesting perspective on the Keteres. You know the story where Moshe basically says, okay, you bring Keteres, and we'll see who gets accepted, and then ultimately Korach is swallowed, and the 250 members around them are burned to death. I'm sorry if that was a spoiler alert for anybody. That's how the story or the rebellion ends. There is a nice kind of piece about B'nai Korach. The Rav writes about it. I know, well, he didn't write it in the Machzor, but in the Perek of Tehillim that we read right before Tkiyah Shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which is actually not too far away. I know that seems a little bit crazy, but it's actually just a couple of months away. And blowing the shofar right before, and we specifically talk about B'nai Korach. Why B'nai Korach? So Rav on the bottom of the Rav Machzor of the Yom Narayim talks specifically about the B'nai Korach being a key element of tshuva, that they had hirhure tshuva, they had thoughts of tshuva right as they were being sucked into the ground along with their father, and ultimately that tshuva actually saved them, and they become a paradigm for tshuva ultimately. So that was an actual, spoiler alert, just in case anyone didn't know that. Now you know that. It's an interesting idea, and it's something to get us in the mindset of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so let's discuss a little bit about what actually happens. Why the Keteres? What exactly happens with the Keteres? Why is the Keteres the litmus test for whether or not someone is essentially doing the right thing or wrong thing in this rebellion? What happened with the Keteres? Why the Keteres? Says the Meshech Chachma, you know what the 250 people were? The 250 people were Eliezer ben Shteyor and all the other Nesiim, right? All the great individuals. And take a look. These 250 people were not like the lowest class. It wasn't like the Crusades where like one person in the top and said, oh, let's go to the Holy Land. And then everybody else who basically was sitting around in the streets just came along, meaning they're like the riffraff of society. We have rebellion. So we'll just take along all the people who are sitting on the streets, nothing to do. They'll just add to our numbers. That's not shot. It's not what was going on here. The 250 individuals who came along with Korach, they were gedolim. They were very important personalities. They were very, very important leaders. Hayu ha-Nesiim. They were the Nesiim themselves. The Chaverov and their friend. V'ra'u kichincha ha-Mishkan. They were the ones that did the Chanukas ha-Mishkan. We talked about them a couple of weeks ago. Every single one of them had the exact same karbanos. Remember. So what's that? And their karbanos were accepted, right? They were accepted by their Rebbeinu Shlom. What do they bring? A chatos, we talked about, and an ola, we talked about, and a shlomim, we talked about. They bring one of each of the karbanos. You know what? You know who else brought these? Aaron HaKohen also brought these karbanos. Kamosha Kosa Reshmi. What was the one thing that set them apart from Aaron? The one thing, meaning from their end, not from Aaron's end. Remember, we saw in Baloscha, Aaron's end was that he got the menorah. That's where Aaron was able to kind of get the step up. And that, and maybe the Dodos, we saw the Ramban there, Hanukkah, etc., right? Good Chazara. But what was it that made the Nesiims contributions unique and standing out? The answer is the Keteris. Rak Keteris Yachid leMatzah. I'm sorry. Rak Keteris Yachid leMatzahna sheYekarev leShum Adam. Rak leNasiim Bilvad. Shelachem Yekrivu. Come on to Amar Menachos. They brought for themselves. And it's the only time that a Keteris was ever brought for an individual. As we know, right? Any Keteris that's kind of brought, the incense that's brought, sorry if I didn't translate that earlier, the Keteris is the incense. Any incense that's brought by a Yachid, by an individual, and not for the Tzibur, and not for the community as a whole, it's considered a keteris zara. It's like a foreign keteris. It's a foreign incense. And in fact, as the Meshech Chachma, Nadav and Abihu themselves died. They were burnt alive as Kohanim. Nonetheless, why? Because of the fact that they brought a keteris zara. That's the Eish zara. So what's going on here? The Nesim were able to bring the keteris, but the Kohanim, specifically Nadav and Abihu, the children of Aharon, were unable to bring the keteris? Now we'll be able to understand why was it the Keteris the litmus test for this debate, this rebellion. You know what they thought? Keteris? That's the one way we have a step up on you, Moshe and Aaron. That's the way we have a step up on your children, Moshe and Aaron. Isn't that gewaldic? Guess what? We're in a rebellion! For a rebellion, we're trying to prove that we too are deserving. What's the one thing we should dafka feel like, we should bring and we'll prove our point? Dafka the Keteris. Because the incense was the one thing that they already set them apart from Aaron Ubanov. Aaron Ubanov were not able, they were not capable of bringing a Keteris on their own. We already have proof in the pudding. Nadav and Abihu died because of a Keteris that they brought on their own. So says the Nesiim, guess what? And all the other 250. We are ready. This is our team. Our team, the Nesiim, are on our side. And they have a step up on the Aaron and Moshe because they were able to bring the Keteris by themselves. So guess what? We're going to bring the Keteris. We're going to listen to Moshe. We'll get back to that idea about listening to Moshe in a second because it's quite ironic. Specifically, Korach points this out, which is why Korach himself doesn't bring the Keteris. Korach points it out and says, isn't that ironic? We're making a whole rebellion against Moshe, and yet we're following his rules as to how we figure out who's right. Right? It's a little ironic to think about. Korach screams at them, don't bring him. What are you listening to him for? You're specifically coming after him and saying it's a rebellion. What kind of rebellion is that if you're listening to him anyway? That's weak. That's Korach's argument. That's why Korach himself does not bring the Keteris. Korach doesn't bring the Keteris. These brought the Keteris. You know why? Because they're like, we got this. We're winning this. It's the Keteris. What would be more magical for us than the Keteris? We already won that war. We got to bring the Keteris, and other than Avihu, proof in the pudding, they couldn't. So that's why they brought the Keteris. But it's a little bit of like, you thought you were going to win this one. Dafka with the Keteris is their bonus song. Dafka with what you think you have a higher hand on, that's where we're going to get you back. That's the reason in the first place that they thought, they could go on Korach's side because I have a step up on the Kohan. So what happens? You think this is what makes you so great? This is also your downfall. And sometimes this exists in our lives as well. Sometimes we feel like we have such a koach in some area of our lives that like nothing can stop us. You know, that feeling like you're flying high and like, it's gewaldic. And then like a cartoon, like you're running in that way and then like you hit a glass wall. You know what I'm saying? Like you run right into that glass wall. You're like, what? Just smack me in the face. I thought this specific thing was like my koach. This was like my strength. This is like my superhero moment. And guess what? It wasn't. It never was supposed to be. Right? Your Keteris was for that one moment, Nisim. You start taking that Keteris to mean a lot more than it is. You think that you're much greater than you are. You think that you should take down Moshe and Aaron because of that Keteris specifically. I'll show you. says the Rosh Hashanah. That Ketores is going to be meaningless. Meaningless. That's where your mistake is coming from. And he makes an interesting point about the Vayehi. There's a Vayehi, Hamakri Bayom HaRishon, earlier, right, when we saw the Nesiims bringing the Karbanos to the Vayehi. Well, guess what? Every time that it says Vayehi, Einu Elo Tzara. Well, that time doesn't sound like a Tzara. This is the Hakrava. They're bringing Karbanos for the Mishkan. They're setting up the Mishkan. It's an exciting thing. What's the Tzara? Says the Meshech Chachma, you know what the Tzara is? Is that they're going to bring a Keteres today, and they don't know it yet, but they think they're so great because they're able to bring the Keteres today. That's going to be their downfall. That inherent in their greatness, in their Tiferes, is going to their splendor, they're feeling so Gishmak, that's going to be their downfall. It's an important lesson in each and every one of our lives that sometimes when we have the privilege of stepping up, of being a leader, of being involved in something, not to take it too far. We had the gzechus at that time, but that's kochi votzim yadi. It wasn't because of me. I should view it as a privilege to have been involved at that. Don't make that your downfall as well. And it applies in so many areas of our lives. We're not going to go into too many examples, but I think it's a beautiful idea as to exactly what the Ketores is doing and what the fault was, or what the problem was of the Nesiim. And as I pointed out to you before, Korach goes to the Nesiim when they're bringing the Ketores, and he says, "Halo atem chayshtim esben hamram? Have you got it all wrong? Shezeh asa melibo. V'im came, do atem shonam l'kol l'kach matos l'hakter Ketores kama sheyitzaveh. What are you doing listening to Moshe? He's telling you to bring the Ketores to prove his point. Maybe he knows it's a trap all along. Don't listen to the guy. You're making a whole rebellion." And this is how the Meshech Chachma basically understands that for Korach, this is all about rebellion. He had a lot of sinah towards Moshe. He wanted to take down Moshe. His whole goal was to drop Moshe down a rung. For the others, it was all about elevating themselves. And so they fell for this. They made a mistake, but they weren't in the evil mindset of, "I want to take down Moshe." They just wanted to show, "Oh, we too are deserving of this." And in some ways, actually, there's a kedusha that comes out of that. Keep in mind, after all, there's a kiddush Hashem that comes out of them making themselves a lesson, basically, through the Ketores. They brought the Ketores because really, ultimately, they just wanted to get kedusha for themselves. They wanted to be involved in the Shlom Zavodas Hashem. They made a mistake in doing so, and they followed Korach, who was really just there for a rebellion. Says the Meshech Chachma, through that mistake, there's still a kedusha that comes out of it. They became the example through which all of Klal Yisrael learns a very significant lesson. And so therefore, they actually do gain a little bit of, right? Ultimately, Shem Shemayim is niskadesh through their actions. They get burnt up. That's the end of their lives. It's the last mistake they'll ever make. Okay. But it was a mistake with a little bit of the right kavana, and therefore they were able to do so and simultaneously, in addition to being punished, simultaneously gain kedusha as well. That's the Meshech Chachma. I'm sorry, someone's trying to get in. I missed that. Okay, next. The Nesiv HaShalom. So that's one idea, again, all about the Ketores, what the Ketores was representative of, what the mistake of the Nesiim was, thinking that they were so geshmak because of the Ketores, and how it actually was their downfall, but simultaneously where Korach's intentions were lying, namely in the rebellion specifically, which is why he didn't bring the Ketores, because he's like, "Why are you listening to Moshe?" And why the Nesiim themselves, in listening to Moshe and showing their true intentions, ultimately actually did bring about a little level of Kedusha into this world. That's the Meshech Chachma. I think it's a beautiful Meshech Chachma, and I think it's a nice context for understanding what goes down in the showdown. Okay. Now to the last piece of the Nesiv HaShalom on this parasha. And the Nesiv HaShalom is trying to understand what's the, everyone hopefully has heard, if you haven't heard of this idea, what ends up happening. The Tanchuma points out that Korach goes to Moshe, and he says, Moshe, right? What is he wearing? He's wearing a talis. And a talis, you should know, a talis has tzitzis on it, and on the tzitzis, right, we learned actually this past week at the end of Parashas Chukas, right, about tzitzis and the techeles and the one string, and Soloveitchik's perspective on the fact that one string is representative kind of a long-term perspective of Jewish history, that it stands out amongst the white strings, Seder. So he says, wait a second. do I need techeles on the strings if I'm wearing a whole beged of techeles? Meaning, if techeles is only supposed to remind me, and hopefully you remember this, or Soloveitchik reminds, right, that the blue is supposed to remind me of the yam, and the yam is supposed to remind me of the rakia is supposed to remind me of the kisei hakavod. And if you haven't heard yet in the Parsha WhatsApp group, I shared a beautiful, I thought it wasn't my sharing that was beautiful. It was the beautiful piece that was beautiful. A beautiful kliyakara, understanding what the role of the rakia is and the role of the yam in our avodas Hashem. What a beautiful idea. I'm happy to send you a makar if you contact me. It's a beautiful, beautiful idea. But to get back to here, the Nesiv Hashem. So what's going on here? The whole goal of the blue is just to remind me to get up the Shemayim, right? Ultimately, boom, 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 right? Beautiful. Well, what happens if I'm wearing an entire talis out of blue? Now, it happens to be my talis underneath my shirt, but that's the way most people, right? Chassidim will wear it often outside of their shirt. You can see the beged. That may be along the lines of kind of the original way. We're supposed to see that, right? Recently, you're supposed to see this, and through seeing it, you'll be able to understand and remember, et cetera, et cetera. Beautiful. What happens if the beged is not white, right? But what rather, it's blue. Let the whole thing be techeles. If the whole thing is techeles, then why do I need tzitzis at the bottom, specifically the tzitzis of techeles at the bottom? Why does that need to be the reminder? The blue itself is the reminder. I don't know if you walked around Tzfat ever before, but everything in Tzfat is what color? Blue. Why? Not stam. Because blue is intended to remind you of the yam, and the yam is intended to remind you of Shemayim, the Rakia, and the Rakia is supposed to remind you of the Kisei HaKavod. So let's put blue everywhere. And if we put blue everywhere, hopefully our minds will be on the Rakia at all times. Maybe that's why so many people living in Tzfat have such lofty or high perspectives on life. But it's not stam, by the way. There's a lot of Torah on Tzfat, the top of the four holy cities in Eretz Yisrael, and why Tzfat is like the people that you meet in Tzfat are different, you know, than the ones you meet in Hebron, for example. And it's because of the locations. Hebron are more rooted in the ground. It's all about the ground. Tzfat is all up in the Shemayim. Okay, we'll talk about it another time. It's not go about the four components. There's a beautiful idea about the four fourth components of the world, right? Fire, water, air, and earth. And obviously Yerushalayim is fire. It's Eish, right? You ever been in Yerushalayim for a long time? This is the Yerushalayim, the Jerusalem syndrome. Yeah, you've heard of it, but like you're on fire. You're on fire. You're going at a different pace of life. And in Tzfat, your mind is in a different space because you're loftier. And Hebron is your earth. You're connected to the earth. And what am I missing?
Tveria.
There you go, perfect. The water, exactly. You bite by the water, it's a different experience as well. Okay, Beseda, let's go on. So this has nothing to do with the Nesiv HaShalom, other than the fact that the Nesiv HaShalom is bringing up this Talash HaKulut Cheles Chayeves Metzitzis Optura. And what does Moshe say? Chayeves, you need the Tzitzis. So wait a second, what do you have to do? So says the Nesiv HaShalom, what a beautiful understanding of this question. He was a great man. Korach was not a stam individual. He was great. He was a really gadol in his avodas Hashem. These are medrash. Amru chacham chacham gadol hayakorach mit tuune haaron. Avodas haisa biyiras haromus shehi madrega gavoa biyoser. He had the level of yiras romus. We always talk about yiras romus as something that we want to aspire to. We have avodas Hashem. We have yiras chait, right? And then there's a different level of yira. There's a level of awe of the Ribono Shel Olam that kind of combines Ava and Yira together to have a Yiras Aromos, that you're not just afraid of the fact that the Ramon was going to punish me for my sins, but really it's a fear of losing out on that relationship with the Ramon Hashem. He was mamish up there in that ability to understand his Avodas Hashem. He didn't have that lowliness, the sense of lowliness of achna, to lower himself down and understand the Mekabel where he's at in this world. Someone else has a higher level of power. I can't bring myself down to understand that that's not my tafkid right now. Yeah? What does that mean? Knaf, I'm sorry. The Tcheles Meramez al Yiras HaRayimus, the Tcheles itself represents the Yiras HaRayimus, the high level of understanding. Remember, if I'm constantly thinking of the Ribono Shel Olam because of that blue, so that's a different level of Yiras HaRayimus. at the same time, knaf moira al midas achna v'shipus. The corner of the garment, the tzitzis, bringing you down, keeps you grounded into the right. Your mind might be up there, but you're grounded by the tzitzis. It pulls you down, so to speak, those strings. Maybe I don't need achna v'shiflus. If I just have Yiras Rambam who says Korach, I should be Kohen Gadol. I'm a great man. I know it. So what does he do? He says, I have all tcheles, i.e. fill in Yiras Rambam. If I have all the Yiras HaRambam, do I need the tzitzis? Do I need the hachna, the thing that's going to pull me down? If I have such great Yiras HaShamayim, do I need to also feel like a lowly individual? Is that necessary? That's Korach's question. In order to become the Kohen Gadol, Moshe Shivu, Shechayem es b'tzitzis. Yeah, you need tzitzis, buddy. Why? You need the achlan v'shiflus. You can't do this job of going gadol, of walking into the kodesh kedoshim, of being the only individual walking into a place that mamish is kulo kadosh. You can't do that if you have any shemetz, any amount of what, of loftiness. No, I'm a achlan v'shiflus. I'm a nobody. Aaron has the ma, the what? What am I? The ma brings about the achna v'shiflus. Someone asks, Ma, what am I necessary for? It's achna v'shiflus. He brings up a couple of other beautiful ideas here. I'm going to skip a little bit, just in the interest of time. I want to bring out the last piece here, which is so beautiful. The Nesiv Shalom says over here that Shabbos Kodesh is all about this. That we should go into Shabbos, he says, through, and he says, the Hafuch Boshes, B'tishkach Shabbos. Look at the word Boshes. Boshes, Beis, writes the same exact letters of Shabbos. Beautiful idea. He says, and I'm going to paraphrase the last paragraph. Happy for you to look into it further. He says, we're supposed to go into Shabbos with a level of busha v'achna v'shiflus. Why? Because I'm supposed to be able to think about what happened over the course of the past week. And now I'm going to a place of kedusha. And remember, the Nesiv Shalom always talks about the kedusha, the wellspring of Shabbos for our lives. How Shabbos is that makor of kedusha, the ma'ayana of kedusha. That's a classic. We've seen it just so many times in the Nesiv Shalom over and over again. That is what Shabbos is providing for all of us. And we walk into Shabbos and I did that this past week. And I'm going to go into Shabbos. I'm like a little bit, I'm embarrassed to walk in front of the Rebbeinu Shalom the way I spent this past week. The wasted time, or my attitude, or my perspective on things, my whatever it may be. It's a little bit like not wanting to go to Shacharis the next morning because if I did that last night, how could I do a Shacharis tomorrow, right? It's the same idea, Shabbos. How could I go into Shabbos again if I did this past week? I just can't. We're supposed to go with a little bit of boishas. Not a boishas that cripples us. That'd be terrible. Yeah, if we didn't go into Shabbos because of that, that would be ridiculous. Because ultimately, the Rebbeinu Shlom wants to go into Shabbos. Dafka for that reason. To recognize that we have such greater aspirations for our lives than what happened last week. And that this upcoming week is going to be so much greater. That is the koach of Shabbos. So it says in the Nesiv HaShalom, that's what the boshes is. That's the achnav, that's the shiflos. That's what you need to get at in order to get into Shabbos. And he says, that's exactly what happened with Aaron versus Korach. That we need the component of the boshes and the achra, by the achnav, to bring ourselves down. And to not recognize, to not see ourselves as being so lofty, so great. Anochi ofer ve'efer. We need a little bit of anochi ofer ve'efer if we want to be great. We need to remember that. He has a beautiful line here, right? You have to check your clothing Erev Shabbos. Meaning the stam understanding of that is that you have to make sure you're not carrying anything on Erev Shabbos. But he says, no, it's not beged. It's right. It's begida. It's your rebellion against the Rebbeinu Shalom, which is dafka so beautiful connected to this week's parasha, Korach and his rebellion against the Rebbeinu Shalom. How did I rebel against the Rebbeinu Shalom this past week? I had to check my begida, check myself where I've been this past week. Not only my clothes that have carried me through the week, But my Megiddo, what decisions did I make that were so mistaken so I can go into the Shabbos and allow the Kedusha to actually have an impact on myself? Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to hand over the floor in 1 second. But I want to just draw your attention to an idea from Rav Soloveitchik here, which you could read on your own. But I'm going to basically say that the Rav points out that the Korach was right about one thing and wrong about the other. He was right about the fact that all kulam kadoshim. Everyone is kadosh. Yeah, of course everyone's kadosh. But he's wrong about understanding that therefore everyone is deserving of some social equality to be the leader like Moshe and Aaron. That's the mistake. Yes, everyone is kadosh. And you know, he says, you know where the kedusha comes from? Rashi points out, the kedusha comes from our avos. We glean our kedusha from those who came before us. The kedusha doesn't come just from ourselves. It comes from the generation before us. And therefore, says Rav Soloveitchik, therefore Moshe Rabbeinu and the stam woodcutter, the woodchopper, that stam is just doing whatever he does every day, they both have the same capacity to access kedusha because they both come from the same avos. The same emos. That's our source of Kedusha. He says, you know what Korach got wrong, though? Korach got wrong that he thought that somehow, because of that, the woodcutter should be in charge and Moshe shouldn't be in charge. That's a mistake. He says, you know why? Because Judaism is not satisfied with the social aspect of Kedusha. The outstanding person would not be able to develop into a great leader. If everybody is a stam kadosh because it's inherent in each and every one of us, then no one would step up because of it. There's no need to step up. I'm just kadosh like you're kadosh. We're all the same kadosh because there's no need to step up because we all got it the same way. It's all in our genes. So what do I have to do anything for it? I inherited it. No, hence the Torah says there's a second resource of kedusha, the sanctity which the individual detects in the inner recesses of his personality. No one else has a sanctity like his. An individual sanctity cannot be shared with somebody else. That's the idea. We have two kedushos. There are two aspects, two sources of kedusha in each and every one of us. One is simply by being part of this Eda, part of being part of Klal Yisrael. We have a kedusha because we are part of Kol Yisrael Yesh L'Chelik Olam Haba, Kol Yisrael our kedusha. We all have kedusha. We have all kedusha. But we also have the aspect of having an individuality within that kedusha. It doesn't limit our kedusha. It only gives us the opportunity, the potential to step up and raise that kedusha even beyond where it's been beforehand. And that's by taking out the kedusha that's inherent in each and every one of us and having that be an add-on, a supplement to the kedusha that is provided by being part of the cloud. I hope you've enjoyed the three pieces from the Meshech Chachma, understanding what the purpose of the Torah is and how it was the downfall of the Nisim, while also providing them a source of Kedusha into this world by making a Kiddush Hashem. How we understand through the Nisim of Shalom what Tchelis is all about and what Korach's problem was in his understanding of Avodas Hashem, that we need to ultimately in all of our lives not only recognize that it's important to have Yiras HaRoimus and raise ourselves, but also simultaneously to make sure that we keep ourselves grounded and keep ourselves on the ground at all times, keeping ourselves with shiftless and keeping ourselves in check, so to speak, that we're not so great all the time. We have Nochi Ofer Ba'efer, and also Bishvili Nevra Olam, but important, the idea here is this. And the last idea from Korach himself, from the Rebonish, from Soloveitchik, teaching us the Rebonish Shalom provides us two aspects of Kedusha. One, inherent, because we are Jews, because we're part of this Eda from our Avos, and one, because it's deep down in the recesses of our own lives, that we can add and supplement to that and rise ourselves up higher. Moshe had done that to the nth degree, and that's why Moshe was deserving of being in power, because Moshe was not only the Kadosh through the Avos, but the Kadosh from himself. I wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, and here's Penina.
Hi everyone, good to see all of you. My friend's doing well. So my husband spent time primarily talking about, I would say, the first half of this week's parsha, and so I'll be covering the end part of this week's parsha. You are encouraged to go and learn what's in between and what transpires in these conversations between Moshe Rabbeinu and Korach. What's funny, I don't know if my husband shared this, but we've been teaching parsha to our little three-year-old Shmuel, and for some reason, he got hooked on Dasan and Aviram. We're not totally sure why. He like is obsessed with their names. He like likes the fact that they're like these like villains that leave the money out or whatever. He like talks about them all the time. So this morning I looked at him, I was like, Shmuel, Dasan and Aviram are in this week's Parsha. And he was like jumping for joy. And I was like, and the earth opens and it swallows them. He's like, huh? And I was like, yeah, it's strange. This doesn't normally happen. And then what's interesting is when you actually go into the Pesukim, you recognize that actually it's not clear from the Pesukim that Dasan and Aviram were actually swallowed by the earth. If you look at the Pesukim in Bamidbar Tet Zayin, it seems clear, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Ayika Kala Tola Daber Kol Esvarim Eila, when Korach finished his like manifesto against Moshe, when he finished his arguments against Moshe Rabbeinu, V'tivakaha Adama Asher Tachtem, that ground opens beneath them. What's interesting is that you would think that's enough to say the ground opens beneath them. What happens when the ground opens up? People fall in. Something happened, they fell in. But what? We have like a further explanation of what happened. Pasuk Lamed Bet, V'tivtacha Aretz Et Piha, the land opens its mouth, V'tiv La'otam, it swallows them, the Epateim and their houses, V'eit Kol Adam Asher L'Korach, V'eit Kol Rechush. It swallows them, it swallows his house, and it swallows all the people that belong to Korach and all of his Rechush. What's interesting about this Pasuk? It's somewhat unclear as to who exactly we're talking about, in that it's in plural, V'tiv La'otam, it swallowed them. But at the same time, it's somewhat unclear as to whether it was Korach and his family, and that's who the Otam is referring to, or rather it refers to everyone else. What's interesting is that it continues and it describes what happens to them. But then we see in Pasuk Lamed Hey, Ve'ish yata me'ed Hashem v'tuchal l'chamishim v'matayim ish mekerbei ha'ketoreh. But a fire comes out and eats the 250 people that had brought the ketoreh. We know from the beginning of this week's parsha that Korach, when he went to Moshe Rabbeinu, went with Dasan and Aviram. He went with 250 people. And it seems like there's this like middle of this battlefield where actually, no, it's not Korach and all of these people fell, but rather it was Korach. He and his people that were with him. My husband spoke a little bit about the tshuva of B'nai Korach, but it seems like everyone was swallowed. That was part of Korach's experience, whether or not they stayed there or came back up. That's for a different discussion. And then a fire comes out and swallows the other 250 people that had risen with Moshe. What's interesting about this week's Parsha in general, and my husband, I think, touched on this a little bit in the beginning, is that this is not a typical Parsha. It's a Parsha that feels like it belongs in Bereishis, and that we have so many details about small interactions between people, and we have almost to none halacha, right? After the Torah, and in many ways it's interesting because before the Torah was given, right, the Torah being given in the middle of, let me just let this person in, the Torah being given in the middle of Parshat Yitro, before that, it makes sense you have a lot of stories and a little bit of halacha because the Torah hasn't been given yet. Yet, following the fact, you would think most of the Torah is focused on halacha, it's not necessarily focused on so many stories. And yet we have this thing in the middle of Sefer Bamidbar that really is just a story. It's a story of one of Moshe Rabbeinu's cousins, Korach being one of Moshe Rabbeinu's cousins, coming and beginning a rebellion against him. And I always find it fascinating as to why exactly there's such a large focus. And hopefully through these things that we'll learn, we'll get a little bit of an insight as to why exactly this story in particular is so important. Here we go. Rabbeinu Bechaya tries to understand why exactly we need the Eish and why exactly we need the Adama. Why are these two punishments given to Korach and his people? Says Rabbeinu B'chayim, midosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu mida keneged mida. We know that the midot, the attributes of Hashem, are mida keneged mida. Mida keneged mida being something because of something else, right? That because someone does this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu acts in a certain way. Korach bikesh ma'ala rama she'ina ru'uya lo. Korach wanted a level above that wasn't appropriate for him. Uba bazeh keneged Hashem Yisbarach. And not only did he feel that way, and I think in everyone's life, there are times where they feel like, hey, I'm working for this person, but I would do such a better job. And it would be better if I was in charge, right? I think there are moments in everyone's life, whether it's now or later down the road, where you'll probably hit a situation where you're like, hey, I could probably be doing a better job than the person that's above me. That being said, it's different here. It's not that Korach is coming in and saying, I could be doing a better job than Moshe Rabbeinu. It's also Korach saying, I could be doing a better job than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because I know better. I should be the one that's talking to Hashem panim al panim. Hashem doesn't know who's the right person. It's me. I'm the one that knows. L'fichach nidun b'yirida hu v'hanismach imimo. Therefore, his punishment was that he was judged with being pushed lower. Korach, it's interesting. It's a little bit like Migdal Bavel. Migdal Bavel that tried so hard to build up against And Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem says, no, you're going to then be squashed and spread out all around the world, right? You're not going to be able to build a statue with everyone in the world again that's going to reach up to me. The same thing here. Korach tried to raise himself up to a level that he wasn't appropriate for him, and Kadosh Baruch Hu said, no, your punishment is going to push you down a little bit. In addition, what's interesting is that Korach was involved, and his people were involved in this idea of the Ketorah. Also, this idea of burning was also mita keneged mita. Why? How did they come to prove that they were supposed to be the ones that were chosen? They brought this ketoret that on top of it was ish. And because of that, Hashem said, do you want to use ish to prove that you're supposed to actually be the leaders? I'm going to judge you with Ish. I'm going to judge you with fire. And I'm going to show that actually, no, you're not supposed to be the leaders. What's important to recognize here is Rabbeinu Bechaye is twofold. First off, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just give punishments that come out of nowhere. The punishments that are given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu are very often tied up with what we do. And I think when we think about Schar Va'onesh and in the way that that plays out in our lives, reward and punishment, I think it's important to recognize that Hashem's punishments aren't completely disconnected from what we do. Very often they are very much connected to what we do. I think about this a lot in terms of modern psychology when they talk about children. They say that you shouldn't give punishments to children that are completely disconnected from the action that they do. If you're gonna punish a child, it should be tied up with what they're doing, right? It should feel like it's a direct consequence. I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu is modeling for us this idea that our actions have consequences and our actions lead to results. And sometimes that's even in the realm of punishment. It's not only in the realm of how your actions looked after the fact, but it's also in the realm of punishment. That's the first thing. The second thing to point out is how seriously HaKadosh Baruch Hu took this rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. We saw 2 weeks ago with Miriam and Aaron when they spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, that Hashem stepped in to protect Moshe Rabbeinu's honor. And I think here too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is stepping in not only to protect Moshe Rabbeinu's honor, but protect the honor of Aaron, the honor of the kahuna, the honor of being a Levi. And I think in that way it's significant as well. That Hashem, when Hashem chooses people and Hashem cares about people, Hashem steps in to make sure that their honor is respected and protected. Following this, we're told by the Pasuk, I think people sometimes think that this pasuk, and I'll explain what it means in a minute, actually comes earlier on in the story. People sometimes think, and you might have learned this growing up, you might not have, that this episode of all of these people bringing a stick to the mikdash, and there being a test that's created, that the stick that blossoms is the one that is the one that Hashem chose. And this, all the other sticks that don't blossom are the ones that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't choose. I think people sometimes think that happened during the Korach experience, but it actually happens after. Even after Korach is gone, even after these 250 people are gone, Hashem still wants to show Klal Yisrael, Aaron HaKohen is the Kohen Gadol. Aaron HaKohen and the Kohanim are the ones that are meant to do the Avodah. And I think what's important to recognize is the impact of Korach's rebellion. It wasn't like, oh, we eradicate Korach and his followers, now the issue is over, goodbye. But Hashem wants to say, I want to erase the Tzlunot B'nai Yisrael. I want to erase the complaints of B'nai Yisrael. And what it shows us is that it wasn't limited to these 250 people. Korach's rebellion stretched. Korach's rebellion was peer pressure on the rest of Klal Yisrael to start something up. And Hashem said, we need to shut this down once and for all. We need to show that it's actually true. Says the Netziv something beautiful. Tzibemash shetziva lahaniach lifnei ha'edut, hu le'ed ve'ot emet, shebechirat oto shevet eino ba b'mikra, mishim shabechorim ta'u be'eva. This sign is to prove, to be a witness and to be a sign, that the chosen Shevet of the Kohanim, of Levi, to fulfill these roles, wasn't just because the Bechorim messed up.
we might have thought, oh, the Bechorim messed up, and so therefore they lost the opportunity to play this important role. And the Leviim are actually only second best. They're just a replacement. Says the Netziv, this blossoming of the stick was meant to show with an Ot Emet, with a true symbol, that the Shevet of Levi and the Kohanim were actually the ones that were always chosen for this job. Says the Netziv, Elami Ikar HaBria Haya Ra'oi L'yot Kein. But actually, from the beginning of time, it was supposed to be this way. But it wasn't revealed to everyone in the world until there were things that transpired. And this is similar to all of Klal Yisrael. That the thought about having Klal Yisrael be the chosen nation came up before. Came up at the very beginning of creation. But it wasn't revealed to the entire world that Klal Yisrael was supposed to be the chosen nation until generations passed. It's a similar model. The same way when the world was created, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I am choosing Klal Yisrael to be my chosen nation. At that same time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I am choosing the Shevet of Levi to be my chosen Shevet. This is where the Netziv says the complaints of Klal Yisrael came from. They said to themselves, if it was actually supposed to be the Bechorim that were supposed to be the ones that were the chosen people, and now all of a sudden they're replaced because they messed up, so what? Reuven maybe should have taken the place. Shimon should have maybe taken the place. God should have maybe taken the place. Why Levi? And because of that questioning about Levi, that led to their complaints about Moshe and Aaron also. Says that Netziv, Ata yedusha kach ala b'machshava b'eit b'riyah shemayim v'aretz. Through this, they'll know that actually the intention of Levi to be the high Shevet began at b'riyah shemayim v'aretz. But it wasn't until now that it was fully revealed. I think what's fascinating about this Netziv is, first of all, that we never know HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans. We never know for what reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things. And we never know what Hashem's big picture of the world is. And there's a certain level of anivus that we need to accept that. I think about this a lot in terms of Shaul, knowing that Yehuda was going to be the Shevet that produced kingship, and yet he's from Binyamin. Like, what did he think? That he was going to be king forever? Doesn't make any sense. And yet, sometimes there are stages that we have to go through in order to fully reveal Hashem's truth. But I think about a lot recently, there was an article that came out in the New York Times today, if anyone is interested in looking it up, happy to send it, about the level of carbon emissions have decreased significantly over the past 4 months. That if you look at the pictures in India of what their streets look like in New Delhi, about what their streets looked like 3 or 4 months ago and what their streets look like now, you literally think you're seeing a photoshopped image. One image is completely blurry, foggy, smoky, and another image is completely clear. Why? Because of the pandemic, people have not been driving. Because of the pandemic, people haven't been using emissions in the same way that they normally would. And I don't think that's the reason that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us this pandemic, and I'm not going to claim that. But what I do think is interesting is that we don't necessarily know Hashem's larger plans. Maybe Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted the air to be cleaner. And not that that's the reason for the pandemic, but it's interesting to think about components that we wouldn't even think are part of the larger picture and possibly are impacts of things that Hashem has decided for the world. And so I think number one that we learned from the Netziv is we don't know Hashem's plan, and we never know what stage we're up to in Hashem's plan. That's number one. Number two, what I think is important to recognize is that we never know the role that Hashem wants for us at any given moment. Shevet of Levi didn't know that they were going to be given this position. And what I think about a lot is that the Shevet of Levi could have lost this position. The Shevet of Levi, had they participated in Chet HaEgel, could have lost this. They could have messed up. What would have happened then? How would the story have unfolded? Would Hashem's Alta B'machshava B'rosh HaBriya have been changed? And so I think it's important always to live up to our own expectations of ourselves, because hopefully when we live up to our own expectations of ourselves, those are actually living up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations for what he has of us. We're each put here in a specific moment, in a specific place, in a specific environment with specific people in our lives, in specific social circles, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's expectations for what we're going to do in this world. But I think we have to live up to our expectations of ourselves. That's really the only thing that we, I think, that we can do to some degree. And our expectations for ourselves should be formed by Torah and by mitzvah. And that hopefully when we do that, we're living up to Hashem's expectations of us. The last thing that I want to focus on in this week's parsha is at the end of the parsha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a conversation with Aaron HaKohen. Interesting, many of the Mefarshim point out that it was Aaron HaKohen derech Moshe Rabbeinu, even though the Pasuk doesn't actually say that. You'll see in Pasuk Chaf, in Bamidbar Yerchet, Vayomer Hashem al Aaron, and Hashem speaking to Aaron. And he gives him basically a whole mantra of what it means to be a Kohen and how the Kohanim experience the world. That really is the conclusion of this week's Parsha. And we'll get there in a minute as to why I think it's such an important conclusion. But Hashem says to Aaron, Vayomer Hashem al Aaron, Ba'art Sam lo tinecha. When you get to Eretz Yisrael, when your family gets to Eretz Yisrael, you're not going to have a nachla. You're not going to have a specific piece of land. V'chilek lo yeh betocham, and you won't have a section amongst them. Why? This is so beautiful. For anyone that's a Kohen, you're a lucky individual. Ani chalkecha v'nachlatcha betoch b'nei Yisrael. I am your chilek. I am your nachla. How lucky is that? Says refers something beautiful. Nachal, what's a nachla? When we say that the Kohanim are not going to have a nachla, what is a nachla? When we say that the Kohanim are not going to have a chilek, what is a chilek? Says Rav Hirsch, Nachla hi richush hazorim kenachla mitzvah l'dor. Nachla is a piece of property that passes on from generation to generation. What's a chilek? Chalko shel ayachi be'osher ha'le'umi hamit rabe v'holeich ketutza'a mi'ibud ha'adama u'mihizdamniyot matimot achiru. What's a chilek? A chilek is the financial prosperity that one gets from the national identity, as well as what one contributes financially to the national identity. Says Rav Hirsch, the Kohanim don't have a nachla. They don't have a piece of land. They also don't have the responsibility, as he says over here, laharbot et ha'osher ha'le'umi al yedei avodat ha'adama, to increase the national prosperity through working the land. They don't have either of those things. What is ani chalkecha v'nachlatcha? Aleihem likshor el Hashem et kol ha'yisodot ha'chomriyim shel chayei ha'adam. What is the role of the Kohen? It's so beautiful. To connect all of the physical things in this world to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Zehu tefkidam v'yudam be'uma. This is their role amongst the nations. Hitpach uto v'hatzlachato shel kesher zebetalmud v'masa hein chalkam v'haseiga ha'uma. Their job is to take our things that are physical and to tie them up with the spiritual, to connect the chilek and the nachla in order that our material helps facilitate our religious growth and our mesorah. I think this pasuk is so powerful because while the Kohanim, this is their responsibility, it's an aspiration for each and every one of us. It's an aspiration for each and every one of us to make Hashem our chilek, to make Hashem our nachala. Just because Hashem said to the Kohen, this is what it's going to be for you, doesn't mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say, you can't. We have responsibilities of contributing to the finances of Klal Yisrael. We have communities that we're connected to of Yerusha that are passed down from generation to generation. And yet, we have the opportunity to take that physicality and to tie it up with spirituality. To not only say the physical is the physical and the spiritual is the spiritual. But as Rav Hirsch says, L'kasher et Hashem et kol yisod ha'chomerim shechaye adam. To connect a Kadosh Baruch Hu with all the physical things of people. The Kohen's responsibility was to do that for the nation. It's our responsibility to do that for ourselves. To conclude for the night, based on these three sources, I think we get an idea a little bit as to why this parsha is so critical. We get an understanding of what leadership is supposed to be and what leadership was supposed to look like. Leadership in Klal Yisrael is not something that we force. It's not something that we try to do against the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not by questioning people that we really see as leaders, but it's by trying to take on HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. It's by trying to connect our lives on a daily basis to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The guidance that we're given through this week's parsha is that in order to be a leader in Klal Yisrael, in order to serve the community, it needs to be from the vantage point of recognizing who we are vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu, vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plans, vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. And then it needs to be from the perspective of being a leader that tries to combine elements of people's lives to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think there are so many different ways. I know people say this all the time, but I do think it's true. And we'll end with this tonight. There are so many ways to be leaders. There's so many ways to be leaders within our community. There's so many ways to be leaders within our family. But I think what this parsha teaches us is that leadership should come from a perspective of really doing it for Hashem, of not trying to do it just to one-up somebody else. And number two, to believing that the reality of the situation is that a true leader for Klal Yisrael is one that tries to infuse Hashem and Torah into people's lives, and that hopefully Be'ezrat Hashem will all have the opportunity to do that, as well as we'll all have the opportunity to return to a moment in time where we feel like we have leaders like this all around us, namely the Kohanim, that the Kohanim are able to return to their avodah. And by virtue of the Kohanim returning to their avodah, to the Levium returning to where they're supposed to be, we'll all be elevated to a level as well. Wishing all of you a wonderful night, a good Shabbos. Enjoy. I will say that last Shabbos, I had the opportunity to go to shul and hear Kriyas HaTorah for the first time. If any of your shuls have that opportunity, do it. Get up, whenever it is. If there's an opportunity to go to a street minyan, whatever it might be, push yourself to do it. It's a really nice moment. Don't amp it up too high for yourself. It wasn't like, oh, this is the greatest Shabbos davening of my life. In a mask, it's kind of hard. That being said, the ability to hear Kriyas HaTorah is something that is extremely powerful. So if you have the opportunity to do that, definitely push to do that. And have a good Shabbos, everyone. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kanina.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shabbos.
Shabbos.